Welcome to the SEO Insider with your host, Seth Price, founder of Blue Shark, taking you inside the world of legal marketing and all things digital.
Welcome, everybody. We're here with Carl Sakis, Sakis & Company, an executive coach and an agency consultant. Welcome.
Thank you, Seth. Good to be here.
Yeah, I've read a lot of your work and enjoyed you from afar. Tell us, what are some of the things that you think as people are scaling an agency that you see some of the biggest mistakes people making?
One is assuming that what worked before is going to keep working now and into the future. If you aren't looking to grow your agency, you know, you can keep doing what you've been doing, but there are certain breakpoints as you grow. You know, when you grow past 5 people, 10 people, 15, 25, 50 and more, you're going to have to add new structure to your team and you're going to have to change how you do your job. And of course, certainly true if you're running a law firm as well. You know, back in the day, you're doing a bit of everything, and now you're focusing on certain things, ideally the highest value activities, which you as the owner are doing. That's going to vary by what you want or where your firm is. Key is to be intentional about it rather than just getting sucked into doing the, you know, latest firefighting.
You know, on my companion podcast, we had Vern Harnish of Scaling Up. And as I've built the agency along with somebody who sort of I've groomed and grown up with it, who does sort of day-to-day operations, it's amazing. It, you know, while we think agencies are unique, there's a lot of basic fundamentals that the traditional business gurus have put out there that, you know, when executed right, you know, teams and communication and huddles and, you know, planning and all those things, that it's in one sense, there are a lot of things that are unique and a pain in the butt about running an agency, but there seem to be plenty that sort of fit into more traditional business buckets.
And part of our work is putting together the pieces, finding the right combo that works for you and discarding the parts that don't work for you.
You know, it's something you said, I think I've seen multiple times, both through Price Benowitz scaling that from 2 to 40 lawyers, and then the agency, which now crossed 150 law firms. One of the things that I always see, though, and you talk about it, is that it's one thing if you're doing something or yeah, you have a bunch of direct reports doing it, but as it gets to scale and you're one or sometimes two and at some point 3 or 4 steps removed, you know, quality control and management, all of those things, a completely different skill set than when you started with a half dozen clients.
Absolutely. And the bigger you get, the more challenging. For instance, the agencies I work with are typically under 100 people. But in my volunteering, I ran an American Marketing Association chapter, an AMA chapter, AMA Triangle. And we had 100 volunteers and 700 members altogether. That's a lot of potential stakeholders. And so, you know, you need to focus and build a good team and give them structure, because even if you have the best possible person on the team, if they don't know the values, goals, and resources to consider, they're not going to make great decisions on your behalf. They're going to do their best. It's not necessarily what you need them to do. They can't read your mind.
How did you fall into this niche?
I started in digital marketing as a high school student in the DC area. I went to a STEM magnet school, HTML, Thomas Jefferson.
Okay.
Learned HTML freshman year, started building websites, working with small businesses, nonprofits. And, you know, back in the days of, you know, dial up and IE3 and, you know, submitting to search directories and that kind of thing. And I found, you know, I enjoyed helping businesses grow. You know, fast forward a bit, experience doing investment research for several years, working in New York. And ultimately, after working at one agency and then another as a project manager, director of client services, director of operations, I realized there was an opportunity, which is that agencies typically start when the owner or owners, you know, love the work, they have more and more work to do, and they start an agency. And now, suddenly, instead of being a marketer or a designer or a developer, now you are a business owner. And you've got a million things to do and not enough time, and everyone is depending on you to pay their rent or their mortgage or, you know, other expenses. It's a lot of pressure. And I realized there was this opportunity where I like all of the business side of the things, coming from an agency operations background. My parents were both career Army officers. My dad went to West Point, grew up helping in the family's small business after they retired. One of my grandfathers was a business professor at Cornell for 40 some years. Business and leadership and management and digital marketing and agencies, you know, I put all that experience together and launched what's now Sakis & Company. I've worked with one-on-one hundreds of agencies on every inhabited continent.
talk to me a little bit about that. What are the sort of pain points that you end up is it specific? Like you see certain stuff in the earlier stage, mid stage, and you know, what are some of those different pieces that you sort of generalizing, understanding each one's different, sort of looking at, if we could break it into those three categories, what are sort of the things that you see as the highest value adds in each of those stages?
In the early days, it's about building a marketing, whether it's a funnel or a flywheel or something, to get leads in the door so that you can be more selective in your sales process. Speaking with a client recently where they were launching a new agency, they're a year in, already approaching $2 million in sales, which is pretty good in the first year for an agency. But they were saying yes to almost everything. And they were wondering why they were overworked. It's like, well, say yes to everything, you're going to be working like crazy and your team too. So in their case, it was about being more selective. You know, for some agencies, it's how do we get the business in at all? So that's a key early stage thing. At the mid stage, a lot of agency owners, especially if they're leaning toward, you know, if you think about the lifestyle versus equity agency continuum, if the goal is to keep running the agency, they want to get out of all of the day-to-day. You know, not be sending the invoices and ordering printer toner and things like that.
Tasks, I call them.
You know, and so ultimately, you think of that about becoming more and more optional as you run your business, whether it's an agency or a law firm or any kind of professional services firm. And so in that case, it's figuring out how do they get things off their plate to focus on what they want. So a client in Massachusetts, for instance, 2 years ago was like, I'm working nights and weekends. You know, I want to be able to see my family again. What do I do? And we went through my executive coaching program, and he reported he was able to eliminate night and weekend work and spend time with other priorities while still raising prices. So that's often an inflection point. If people lean toward running a lifestyle agency, keep running it. It's a profitable business. There are also some people who lean toward, if we think about lifestyle versus equity, they lean toward building equity, selling their agency. Not everyone does. Not everyone necessarily wants to. But in that case, you have to make yourself completely optional. Because if you aren't optional, you're not going to be able to sell, or you're not going to get a very good deal when you sell. You might have a super long earnout, that kind of thing. So in that case, it's less about making yourself optional for the things you don't want to do. It's like as optional as possible. For instance, a client in Toronto was seeking to become optional, and she found that it worked. She took a multi-week honeymoon trip and came back and found she didn't really have much to do anymore. She'd succeeded. She negotiated an exit and has moved on to run a new business. Right. So those are three things: finding clients in the first place, and then being selective about them, sorting out how to get rid of the things you don't want to do as you grow. And if you choose to do an exit, how do you remove yourself from the business completely so you can get a good deal?
Awesome. You know, one of the things we were talking about before we went on air was the fact that you had some interesting productization or advice for end users. You know, Blue Shark does primarily law firms, talk to us a little bit about that.
Well, in any business where you work with clients, you know, you're going to have some ups and some downs. You know, I've been working with clients since I was a teenager as a web designer. You know, my clients were anywhere from 20 to 50 years older than I was. And so I've been developing a lot of client skills, and I've certainly, you know, made some mistakes over the years. When it comes to working with clients, there are always going to be some ups and downs. And a lot of agencies and law firms focus on client satisfaction, and that is important. You can't ignore client satisfaction, but I would say we need to also pay more attention to agency or firm satisfaction. How happy are you in your client relationships? And I've identified four stages. And if you identify which of the four stages you're in the agency or firm satisfaction index, and identify where you want to go, you can start making positive changes rather than feeling like you're getting pulled in every direction by your clients. I can share the four, and glad to answer any follow-up questions on that if you like.
Sure.
Okay. Well, in stage one, you are in, and you could imagine, you know, like a gas gauge or a meter. In stage one, you are powerless. You are just that. Whatever the client wants, the client is going to get. You can't say no. It feels like you can't say no because you need the business. You need the relationship. Stage two is going from powerless to overwhelmed. Overwhelmed is still not great, but you know, you can start pushing back if they're requesting something that doesn't make sense. You're feeling somewhat more secure in the relationship, but it's still not great. Ideally, you move to stage three, which is confident. You're feeling confident in the client relationship. They ask you for advice. They're usually listening to the advice.
They're your partner at that point.
Exactly. Yes. Yes.
That's what we strive for.
For sure. It's not, you know, a vendor relationship.
I'd like to start out that way. And some people come out of the box that way and some need to be earned.
Some can. And a lot of it comes down to confidence and also the clients you're working with and, you know, what they're dealing with. And if you want, you can go from confident, right? You know, things are in good shape, to valued. When you move to valued on the agency or firm satisfaction,
I assume that translates to they won't make a move without speaking to you.
Exactly. I had a client like that as an agency project manager, where anytime he wanted to make a big decision, he wanted to get our agency's advice. That even came down to his hiring people, to his hiring other agencies for work that we didn't do, but he wanted us to help vet the other agencies. We got paid for doing that. It was a great deal. Now, he was pretty demanding, but, you know, he paid well. And so when you're valued, you know, you are the trusted advisor, as they say.
Well, let me ask you about that.
Yeah.
I love that. And look, our motto at Blue Shark is we want to be their partner. If
yes.
you look as a vendor, it's not going to be nearly as productive as it's a partner.
Right.
And I love the fact, look, I built it with people who I like, know, and trust. They like, know, and trust me. But I find that this is that they do the one many do come and I'm thrilled to speak to them, but it's a non-monetizable event. Generally, it's part of the overall engagement. So it's not a bad thing, but I have done for the most part, a really good job of putting good teams in place that are self-sufficient. They can yes. make the sausage in a positive way. They can put out fires, but that if you are, that it is one thing that is hard to replicate yourself. It could be a rock star like you, Carl, that was the account rep, but they didn't hold on to you long because you had bigger and better things to get to. So look, the balance between that piece of it, I love, but it does require a pound of myself or my president's flesh back in the game, because generally that's where they want to go for that level.
Here's a way to think about that. If, you know, for you and everyone listening, if you want to get yourself out of all of the day-to-day, there are ultimately six roles within, you know, in my expertise in an agency. You've got account management, keep the clients happy and often sell them more work. Project management, which is getting the work done smoothly and profitably. You've got your subject matter experts, your designers, your developers, your analysts, people who are doing the kind of heavy day-to-day billable work. You're still going to bill for AM and PM, but subject matter experts are focused on particular craft. You've got strategists who are sort of a super subject matter expert. They're a bit more like an account manager. They're, you know, usually good with clients. They've got a broad skill. They're thinking strategically. You also have, you know, roles, you know, five and six. You've got biz dev, you know, your marketing, sales, and partnership people. And finally, support about agency operations and leadership. If you're like, how do I get out of this? Well, it's going to be hard to get away from agency leadership or leading your firm in general, right? You can't abdicate that.
Money solves every problem. You hire a high level COO.
Absolutely. Occasionally I hear from people who are like, I want someone to do all of it for, you know, $60,000.
No, this would be a 200,000 plus
absolutely.
Options type person.
Exactly. High base compensation plus bonuses, profit sharing, and or some sort of equity incentives. In biz dev, often you're hanging on to that as the thought leader within the business, that kind of thing. The easiest thing to get off your plate is the subject matter expert work.
Right.
You know, doing keyword research, for instance. Like, you don't need to do that. You can find someone who can do it. You may want to hold on to account management, but maybe you delegate project management, more of the behind the scenes, more internally oriented things. It can be hard to delegate the strategist role because, you know, you're thinking strategically, you develop all this expertise. You're going to pay a lot for a strategist. A client mentioned he wanted to get rid of doing all of the strategy work or much of the strategy work himself. He's like, I don't know, I'm going to have to hire someone. They're going to be expensive. I said, how much do you think you'd pay them? And he's like, probably $150,000. I said, yeah, that's about right for the skill set. He's like, it's a lot of money. I said, yeah, but you're a more than 150,000 person and you're doing it now.
Right.
It would be overall better for you to focus on the higher value things, get someone there. And even at 150, a strategist is going to be billing more than that. And they're helping coordinate even more work that boosts the billables even further. You need to be, you know, no pun intended, strategic about it. If you hire someone who is incompetent or who isn't getting the billing done or doesn't have billables to do, you're going to be in trouble. But think about those six roles: AM, PM, SME, strategist, biz dev, and support. Start taking pieces of those off your plate.
Right. No, I think it's one person gave me the analogy, one of the big writers, I can't remember who it was, that talked about the idea that you have an org chart. You may just not have persons in all of those places, and your aspiration is to start checking those boxes off and putting them in there. There's a guy who's sort of on the outskirts of digital marketing. He was more law firm growth, the late Stephen Fairley, who was sort of early on leveraging paid social in the legal space, worked with law firms on, you know, you know, building law firms with different sort of monetizable widgets that he would sell. Rainmaker Institute was what we call it. But the reason I bring him up was he was sort of a larger than life guy from stage, one of the best guys you'd ever see from stage. And very often the agency owner is the one who gets the speaking gigs, whether it be PubCon or other places you go, you people see you, they like you, you know, they fall into your funnel and eventually they hire you. My question is in your experience, is that something that eventually doesn't have to be the agency owner, or is that something that generally stays with you until an exit? Because it's very hard to scale yourself with somebody that you're not afraid that might leave at some point if they're not a partner in the organization.
The big driver for that is where you fall on the lifestyle versus equity continuum. If you have no interest in selling, you're going to keep doing this. One client said, why would I sell? I'm just going to go start another agency. Like, let's get this running as smoothly as possible. Keep doing it. If you lean toward the lifestyle side of things, keep being the thought leader. I would recommend enlisting people on your team to help diversify that. So you're not having to say yes to every single speaking engagement as you, you know, rise up in your stature. If you lean more toward the equity side of things, I would strongly recommend getting your next layer of your team involved in things. Because, you know, we talk about making yourself optional. If you want to do an exit, I was talking to a friend who works for a private equity firm, and he talked about his ideal target. You know, in their case, it's at least $2 million a year in EBITDA, earnings before interest, tax, depreciation, amortization. And it also needs to be a business that is not owner dependent. So
I get it.
So it's
just fascinating. So it also, owner dependent, it's not the only way to get business, but it seems as you go down that chart, right? Account management, there's a clear path to getting people in there, subject matter experts, find people smarter than yourself. Those are all viable. But the one piece that always seems tough is the thought leader piece. And I guess larger agencies often get people, but there's very often that sort of pinnacle that's hard. Look, you've had the most years doing it. Getting yourself into these conferences doesn't happen overnight. And that it's not always transferable to other people. And there's a certain amount of risk as an agency owner doing that. And so that to me has always been interesting because it is the least lifestyle friendly. Some people really like it, but with kids, it can get old fast. And so it's always seemed to me one of the trickier ways that you know, where you can't be in two places at once. That again, you can layer it. And I think you need to, like, if you want to, whether it's for exit purposes or whether it's for lifestyle purposes, at some point you don't want to be the only essential person. At the same time, you know, when you look at most of the, at least from my perspective, as I look at most of the great agencies, they may have a team that can speak, but their principal is the one that is usually the one most in demand.
Often. And a part of that becomes, you know, if you think strategically about where you want to go, if you're running your firm and you don't want to run it forever, you want more options, you know, you're training up your next layer, you know, your VPs or your directors, depending on how you've structured it, so that maybe you get an invitation to speak for, you know, a second time to a group you spoke at a few years ago. Maybe they don't meet your threshold anymore for audience size or targeting or this or that. you could say, hey, you know, we're glad to participate. I'm not available then, but my colleague so-and-so, they're an expert on such and such. They would be an amazing match.
And it's 50-50. Sometimes it works and sometimes they're like, no, we want you as you are nobody. And that's the decision you
always have to make. And then you have to decide. Yeah. Part of that though is, you know, I'll work with clients, with agency owners who want to either start speaking or speak more. That was my first book, The In-Demand Marketing Agency, How to Use Public Speaking to Become an Agency of Choice. It's a whole process. You know, it's like, if you want to get really good at it, you're going to be investing a lot of time and money on it. But, you know, you can make a significant increase with a relatively small amount. For instance, just knowing, you know, the next time you do a talk, if you're doing talks, get video footage. It doesn't have to be perfect. Ideally, it's good, but, you know, maybe it turns into B-roll. If you weren't capturing that footage from the events before, you're not going to have that to run in your speaker reel. And more and more events require video before you apply. So it's ultimately being strategic and planning ahead. So when you need it, you've built the assets, you've started building it. Same thing with training your team. Don't expect someone to just suddenly start presenting. Right. You know, sign a book to read, send them to a speaking training, encourage them to join Toastmasters or potentially the National Speaker Association, NSA. You know, it's a layered approach. And you know what? Some of those employees might quit, but all of
But they say two things. Someday. One, if you don't, you know, one of the things, if you don't invest in your employees, they may quit. Well, if you don't invest, they may stay. So and you know, to quote Malcolm Gladwell, it's time on task. It's not going to come out of the box the way you want it to be. It's how many times can you, you know, if your friend's trying to break into stand-up comedy, it's no different, right? They work every gig they can because you just got to do it thousands and thousands of times. In our remaining time, I'd like to take you back to you talked about from the agency perspective, which is awesome, but I play in both worlds, right? Since I'm an end user and an agency, and would love to hear your perspective on how an end user, a law firm or any other client should be or getting the most out of the agent. Is it the exact flip of this, or do you have a different rubric for an end user?
Few things to consider. And for sure, you know, you want to have a good relationship, whether you are the client or, you know, you're working with clients. I do have some unique perspective on working with end users, which is that in all of my, you know, all of my professional work, I'm working only with agencies. Through my volunteering, I run a CMO mastermind groups. These are brand side only through the American Marketing Association. And I'm hearing what they're talking about working with agencies. You know, they're thinking about revenue attribution and about how do they sell the CFO on getting additional budget and how do they manage the CEO's expectations about what's going on, things like that. One CMO said, if I'm going into a board meeting and I'm sharing an update as the CMO, he's like, it's 15 minutes. I need to be in and out. It needs to be like a commando mission, in and out. If I'm there longer than 15 minutes, I screwed up. Something's wrong. Yeah. So certainly some perspective from them. And of course, having been a client, you know, as well, you know, when it comes to finding the right agency, I'm certainly a fan of finding a specialist agency, an agency that knows your industry rather than is learning it. You know,
absolutely. We pitch that all as, you know, we come from a point of view of like, you don't dabble in legal. You either do it or you don't. Exactly. There's so many nuances. You can lose your bar license. There's competitiveness issues in legal that are not in other areas. So like, I get that.
You know, sort of you need heart surgery. You want a specialist and not just any cardiologist, but one who, you know, or, you know, cardiac surgeon who's done that exact procedure 500 times before and hopefully hasn't killed anyone, you know, kind of thing. So ideally a specialist agency. There could be some exceptions to that, but, you know, ideally specialist. You also want to consider how are they doing in their own marketing? You know, if they're selling SEO services, like, do they rank?
It's funny you say that because for many years, our own agency didn't really pay much attention to SEO. We got our clients for speaking. It was cobbler shoes. You were like, and I see a few of our competitors out there who have put some really invested into it. So it's interesting. You know, I personally, in the B2B space, look differently at SEO. Like, I don't personally sell SEO to B2B clients. Our world is the B2C world, and where it seems to have at least in the local search arena, a much bigger effect, and I can get ROI and it's a better value proposition. But it's just so funny because it's something internally we struggle with, because you want to have it there for affect, even though it may not actually be a client generating mechanism where they're randomly looking organically for things, that most people are going through some trusted source to get there.
And even if someone is referred in, they're still going to look at your website, see, you know, when was the last time the blog was updated?
Understood. Agreed there. I was talking about just optimization.
Oh, there we go.
Like, it's a decision, because you may not actually need it for what you're doing, and it may not bring ROI, but is it a look and feel? Is it a trust factor? I've struggled with that a little bit, and that I feel silly putting good money after bad at the same time. Like, you want to have a pretty website. Is that something that you need to be present and on the short list when people are looking?
And a lot of that will depend on how sophisticated your clients are. You know, if they are super sophisticated, they're going to have higher expectations, versus if you're focusing on a smaller business, smaller firm, like, they just need someone to help. So,
is it like, it's almost like a circus trick. And you're like, you know, is it really the end result is how have you done? So again, it's just funny. We go through the back and forth internally on that ourselves.
It's a tough situation. The third thing that comes to mind, if we think about, you know, if you're an end user hiring an agency, ideally go to a specialist, or at least start there. Then look at how the agency is doing its own marketing or doing the services that you would be buying from them. And the third thing would be, what is the experience like from a client service perspective? Do they show up on time for the call? If they even starting in the sales process, do they show up on time? Do they, you know, remind you about the link to use? Do they give you an idea of what they're going to cover? Do they ask you what you need from the call, kind of thing? Is there any sort of an intake process? For instance, I won't get on an exploratory call, a sales call, until people have completed my pre-intake questionnaire. Because I know from having done hundreds of them, it'll help the potential client have a better experience. I could sort out. Sometimes they may not be a match. I can let them know that, save everyone the time.
No, look, couldn't agree more. We got to the point where we ask gross revenue just to know what we're dealing with. Because, you know, you can tell an order of magnitude about whether and where somebody is. And again, get them the help they need. Fascinating. Is that the final pillar?
I mean, there's many more, but I would start there. Yeah.
Awesome. For people that want to get in touch with you or learn more about you, what is the best way to learn about Carl and your consulting?
If you're on Twitter, I'm at Carl Sakas, KARLSAKAS on Twitter. Or visit my website, sakasandcompany.com. That's SAKASAND, the word company.com. I have hundreds of articles on running your agency more smoothly, more profitably. And if you run a law firm, most of the advice applies as well.
I appreciate it. Well, thank you, Carl. It's been an honor and pleasure to have you here today. And hopefully when things get back in person, we'll get to see you at a conference at a fun location real soon.
Looking forward to it. Thanks, Seth.
Thank you for tuning in to the SEO Insider with Seth Price. Be sure to check back next week for fresh insights into building your brand's online presence. Episodes are available to stream directly on Blue Shark Digital's website.